We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 392. Today's show is brought to you by Indochino, ShipStation, and Harry's. Scott, what's up? Sunday after Thanksgiving, getting the Sunday scaries. This is one of those days of the year where no one wants to go back to work.
Yeah, you got a long week before you. The holiday is obviously a Thursday, so most people check out a lot of the week, honestly, but Wednesday, definitely. And then, did you have a good Thanksgiving? I know you've been battling the elements, right? You had your Jordan Thanksgiving?
I've been sick the entire month of November. That's not even an exaggeration. I was joking with Leanne that ever since we got married, I've been sick. So I'm clearly allergic to married life.
Something's going on there.
Yeah. But I've had a terrible cold the last week. Maybe the worst holiday to be sick on is Thanksgiving, because when you have such a bad head cold, you don't have really an appetite. You can't taste the food. And that's the one holiday of the year. You want to be able to eat everything you can possibly get your hands on, taste all the delicious food. And I was just sitting there. I could have been just eating bland pasta for all I knew. I couldn't taste shit.
So the one thing that's to me like one of the really big downfalls, because everybody's like, if you go somewhere else for Thanksgiving, it's great because you don't have to do the cleanup. You get to leave and, you know, you help clean up. But the majority of it, someone else is dealing with. But the problem I have is that, like, yeah, they're always like, you know, take some leftovers, but you never take enough. You definitely don't take like the amount that you want to take. So not having Thanksgiving at your house, because we went to my brother-in-law's place and, you know, my wife filled up a couple bags. Obviously, she didn't put all the things in there that I wanted. She put in the things that she thought she wanted and then like felt bad for taking too much and all this crap. So I get back and I don't have, you know, the second dinner that I want the next day.
You don't have your sandwich fixings.
The fixing, yeah. But I like to do like a full-blown second one and then also the sandwich.
The night of or the next day?
Oh, no, the next day. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The next day or even like 2 days later. But, you know, it just runs dry very fast. And that's one of the big things. So I will deal with like all of the stuff that comes along with hosting a Thanksgiving just so that I can have the leftovers. That's my new position.
Why don't you just cook a turkey on your own, even if you're not at home?
It's just not the same. That's not the same. Because then what am I supposed to... Then I would literally have to have like another dinner. The whole point about this is it's a special occurrence, right? You do this on Thanksgiving. It's the holiday that you do it. If you start doing it more often, then it becomes something that's...
No, you just cook... I mean, this is what my mom does this all the time. I mean, she hasn't hosted Thanksgiving in 15 years, and every morning on Thanksgiving, she's cooking her own turkey.
Oh, so even when you go somewhere else, your mom's cooking a turkey because she knows everybody's staying in her house. That's different.
It's not a giant turkey. It's a smaller turkey, but it's a
and
turkey
And is she purely doing it for the leftovers?
Yeah. It's only for the next day sandwiches and then probably another meal on Saturday or Sunday.
Okay, so I understand that. That makes sense because you guys are probably going up there and she's got the family staying at the house and all these things, so she needs that. I get that. I'm not willing to do it. That's a lot of work. Yeah. If I'm not hosting it and I'm just doing a whole thing, because you're not going to have all the sides. To me, like this, it's the sides too. You need all the good sides that everybody else makes too, right? Like you have the medley of sides. So I don't know what you go to. Like, do you have a go-to side? Because I certainly do.
Yeah. So I went to Leanne's side this year for Thanksgiving. First time that I've been there for Thanksgiving, and they had like a whole stuffing lineup. There was four different stuffings at the table.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, though, I couldn't fully enjoy them.
Because you had no idea which one was which.
Because I couldn't. Everything was like muted. Everything was like turned down like 40% as far as taste goes. So it all tasted good, but you're not getting the full experience. It was really, I was sitting there jealous of everyone who, I mean, everything was delicious, but usually stuffing. I like to just basically you get a pile of food. And then you take gravy, and no matter what, you just dump it over everything. But I also like having cranberry sauce. A lot of people don't like cranberry sauce. I like
the
to mix
can, the can, or the or the.
I'll like do whatever. I'm not opposed to the canned stuff. Like everyone can just admit the canned stuff tastes good. It probably takes months off your life every time you eat it, but it tastes good, people. So yeah,
it,
I like
it does.
To get,
I mean, if you like cranberry sauce, maybe, but
it's, oh, you don't like cranberry
just not,
sauce.
It's just not good.
No, I like it, and I also like it for the next day sandwich. You mix a little cranberry sauce with some mayo on the bread. That's a nice treat for your sandwich.
Something that my family used to do, we haven't really done it in a long time because it was my great aunt and uncles. It was kind of like their thing is instead of the cranberry sauce during dinner, they may have still had cranberry sauce. I don't remember. But ahead of dinner, and it was before dinner, there would be like a little dish of sherbet, like orange sherbet that we would have actually with dinner or like right before dinner. And then you go into your Thanksgiving dinner. I've never seen that in any other places. To clean the palate.
Yeah,
it's
a palate cleanser. Yeah. That's an Italian thing.
I haven't really seen it, and nobody's Italian on that side of the family, but I haven't seen it anywhere else. I haven't really heard many people talking about doing that, but we would always have it ahead of dinner, and then you go into it.
That's also why there's ginger when you go to a sushi restaurant.
Yeah, I know that.
It's the same concept.
I've seen people just eat the ginger, though.
Oh, yeah, I dated a girl a while back, and she used to put the ginger on top of the sushi.
No, like, that's for the each dumbest bite. Thing. That's so stupid.
We broke up.
Good.
But all right, hope everyone out there had a nice Thanksgiving. And I apologize for like the fourth episode in a row for cacking through this entire thing. I'm going to try and cough off microphone. But we've got already about half the tickets sold for the March 14th weekend in Tampa for the spring training event. It's an awesome deal, $85. You get a game ticket for that Saturday up in the right field, first base side, bullpen club. All you can eat buffet with ballpark food, and all you can drink domestic beer. It is an awesome deal. It's a ton of fun. This is now the third year in a row we've done this sort of
the club thing.
But we've been going to spring training for five. This will be our fifth year. It's one of my favorite trips of the year. Cannot wait for this year, March 14th weekend.
Yeah, it's domestic beer. It's all the fountain drinks you need, and wine as well. And the cool thing about the bullpen club is it stretches all the way down the first base line. So it actually starts behind home plate and goes down the entire right side. So they have buffets set up like towards home plate and like, you know, stretch down a little bit further. And then the bars, closer to where the actual bullpen is. And that's where the sitting area is and all that stuff too. So you're able to like walk up and down and stretch out throughout the first baseline. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, there's about pretty much half of them are sold at this point. And I know we've gotten some big groups coming down. There's a bachelor party coming down as well that's still putting their plans together. So nice. I've got some
We've
some
had
tickets.
Bachelor parties in the past. It's a great idea.
It is a good idea. So we've had some tickets. I have some tickets set aside as well for a couple people as well. But so don't wait. They're going to be gone very soon. I don't expect them to be around long. And then again, we have a good amount of people coming from the website this year too. So looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. And
some kick-ass regular season events too to start the year. May 9th against the Red Sox. That's a Saturday game. And then Friday, June 26th against the Cubs. That's going to be a really fun whole. It's going to be like Cubs week because you don't see the Cubs come in very often. I can't even remember the last time the Yankees played the Cubs in the Bronx. I know they went in 2017 to Wrigley Field, but can you recall? Can you like picture that game? I can't even remember it.
No, we could probably look it up pretty easily. But
yeah, that's yeah.
The I don't know when the last time they came to the Bronx, if they have, but that's going to be fun. It's one of those, it's like when the Dodgers came, it's just one of those games that the teams that you kind of want to see in different places. We want to see the Dodgers back in New York, back in New York, like they've been in New York in our lifetime. But, and then the Cubs are one of them. They're just a historic franchise in the National League. And obviously before they did all the interleague play, these teams never played each other. So the Cubs certainly never, play the Yankees because you got to be in a World Series for that. You got to actually, get to that point before the interleague play started. So that was few and far between for the Cubs. So this is one of those very rare occurrences. So I'm excited for that. And then we got two more home games coming up with that at Yankee Stadium for this season for the BP Crew events. We'll be announcing soon. We're doing a game at the Trenton Thunder this year. I'm very excited about that one. That one is June 13th. We'll put out all the details for that one, but we're doing a lot of really cool stuff around that too. There's going to be opportunities for all of us to participate in some of the games in between the innings. Like they're going to be doing a lot of that stuff from our section. So keep an eye out for that one, and then we're working on a road trip or two as well.
Cannot wait. All right, so Thanksgiving has come and gone. The winter meetings are coming up December 8th. Basically no movement on the free agency front. There's a couple of minor things. The The White Sox spent some money recently in the free agent market, but none of the big names have gone. It just, here we are again for the third year in a row, crickets on the hot stove.
Well, I mean, just because they're shuffling their decks, man, they're trying to find out what's going on. And I think you have, because of all of the Houston stuff, I think it kind of set things back as well. I mean, not to say that, big guys weren't going to fall if the Houston news didn't come out, but it's certainly overshadowed everything. And I think that teams kind of want that to die down. And I mean,
Why?
I don't know. I just think it's taken up a lot of the time. And
it's taken up a lot of the media's attention and a lot of the news cycle. Pretty much everything news related that's come out for baseball this offseason has been negative.
Well, that's the thing. You kind of want it to run its course, right? Let it play out in the media. Let it run its news cycle, at least the beginning, because I'm sure it's going to come back up, raging again when the winter meetings start. But at least you have to let it run its cycle. Like, you can't just make a big move in the middle of that. There's an opportunity
to
get overshadowed.
That's the perfect time. Everyone else
not
is going
to
be focused
that
on
be,
that.
Not for teams that want to. Well, yeah, I mean, there's things going on behind the scenes, but not for teams that want to make a big splash in the media for signing a guy. That's, I don't know. To me, it's not the time to do it. Yeah. But we'll see the winter meetings. They'll all happen. Obviously, I think a lot of things happen after that anyway, just because these guys get in the same room. Not to say they're not talking, because they are, but it's just one of those formalities.
Well, no, you can't. They can't talk because remember, that's can't. Okay. You can't talk about how you've been talking.
Sure. Yeah. No.
You're gonna slap on the wrist for that.
You can't speak out about how you've been talking.
Yeah.
But they're talking.
Well, I just think back.
Maybe
to,
they're going into like the PlayStation and like Xbox rooms and talking in there.
What do you mean the PlayStation rooms?
Don't you know that? That's how like terrorists talk. That's how like things happen.
Oh,
they go in the chat rooms of the games. Me either,
been,
but I just know
a gamer
that
since college. It's 10
that
years
exists.
Ago.
That exists. My little brother is. That's how he hangs out with his friends. He goes in those rooms and they all hang out.
When you say these rooms, these virtual
they're like chat rooms. They're like chat rooms.
We're making fun of this. Meanwhile, we've made a bunch of friends on the internet because we all like baseball.
No, but it's a different way of doing it. You don't think about that. I mean, there's also I'm trying to think of what show it was, like Homeland. One of those shows, you see that there's coordination, there's communication in these chat rooms from like terrorist organizations.
So,
like it's a way to hide. Basically, it's a way to mask that you're talking. So
Brian
I could see Billy
playing
Bean and
MLB The Show.
Yeah, or he's live. Is he actually playing?
Or is it going to be like Call of Duty and it's not even a baseball game?
Probably not. It's probably some random game where he's got a burner account. Lots of levels of security there.
Yeah, it's not terrible. But I just think back to some of the really busy winters when the Yankees and Red Sox were going at it. Do you remember like the infamous 2003 Thanksgiving when the Yankees were going after Jose Contreras and Curt Schilling? Like those were the two battles. And there's that story about Theo Epstein like raiding Curt Schilling's Thanksgiving. I'm sure that was a really lovely Thanksgiving table anyway with Curt Schilling. But he like stalked his house, made sure he like finished dinner and then like had a meeting with him or something crazy. And it's just, that doesn't happen anymore. This free for all for the top guy, either on the free agent market or the trade market or whatever it is, just doesn't seem to happen anymore.
No. Well, again, I just think it happens. It's just more of a behind the scenes thing. I think that these guys are really taking more calculated
approaches.
Yeah,
but I wish they had those fun stories to talk about.
Yeah, we will maybe in like 15 years. We'll find
like
out
we
more
spent,
about them.
We spent weeks last offseason talking about how the Yankees took Patrick Corbin out to Taco Bell.
Yeah. Yeah. When was that? When did that actually happen? Did that happen before or after? I don't remember the time frame.
I don't remember.
But
I feel like that was around November, right? Late November, early December time frame.
Yeah. The whole Cole thing, though, is very interesting now, too. And I know we're going to talk a lot about Ellsbury because of the Yankees trying to get out from under that contract. And I think the dynamic that they're Cole and Ellsbury are both Boris guys. And if you think about this, like people are like, oh, you know, it's Ellsbury. Who gives a shit? Well, Scott Boris gives a shit because there's a lot of money at stake right now. What is it, $26 million or something? That's a lot of money for a guy to lose. I mean, we already know that it was already as Yankee fans, we have already said goodbye to that. We've already just like, it is what it is. He's gone. Contract's gone. Like out of sight, out of mind. But now the Yankees and Boris and Ellsbury have a very big fight on their hands on both sides for a lot of money and a lot of money that has big implications for what could be done. And I don't know if it's going to, you know, if there's anything going to be, you know, resolved in time to make any moves, probably not. But it's still a good amount of money for that those two parties. And the fact that Boris is going to have communications with Cashman about Cole, knowing that they're not trying not to pay Ellsbury that money, that's got to be something there. There's got to be some weird dynamic.
Yeah, let's get into the Ellsbury versus the Yankees. But first, want to talk to you about Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more, and everything is made to your exact measurement for a great fit. The process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or do it all yourself online at Indochino.com. I've used them before in the past for suits and dress shirts. It is well worth the money and the time. You go in, you know you're getting a quality product. It's fun too. You can customize it, you put your initials on it, you can pick the liner, and you know you're getting a good product. It's going to fit you well. It's a nice modern fit suit. So you go into a job interview, you go into work, or you go into a wedding, you're going to look great. Right now, you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BLUEWIRE for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. I think that the Ellsbury Yankees thing is going to drag out all winter. I think it's just talking, these articles being reported, and I know Ken Rosenthal reported that Ellsbury's doctor didn't treat him for any baseball-related injuries. They were all other ailments he's dealing with, more on along the lines of trying to just rehab and general health. And apparently Ellsbury's been seeing this doctor for years, and it was never an issue until the Yankees decided, oh, well, we don't have that insurance in the last year of the contract. Let's see if we can get out from under this. But I do like where you're going with this, and how does this affect their negotiations, if there's going to be negotiations for Cole and Scott Boras? Like, it can't help, right?
I mean, you got to believe that Scott Boras at this point in his career can separate the players and dealings with a team and have them in compartmental, you know, different compartments as far as negotiations and feelings. I mean, he's a cold-blooded, cold-hearted killer is what he is. Scott Boras is out for blood and he's out for money and he's out there to make as much money for his guys as possible. And when you're looking at the two different paydays, obviously there is a hell of a lot more money involved currently in Cole, in Gerrit Cole over the 1 year of Jacoby Ellsbury that he really has nothing to do with at this point. Cause he has no control of anything.
But Scott Boras and just the players union in general does not want this to be a precedent where teams can void final years of contracts or multiple years of contracts for this kind of thing. The reason baseball players union is so strong is because they maximize dollars for players with these big long-term contracts and they're guaranteed, which is unlike other sports. And maybe that's a problem, right? Because they're not seeing as frequently guys getting signed to long contracts on the open market. So maybe that is a problem, but they don't want this precedent to start where a team can just say, oh, you went to this doctor. You saw the dentist, and we didn't approve that dentist. So guess what? You can't get the final year of your contract.
I mean, the bottom line.
Anything. They can start fudging things.
Not really. They just have to get approval for going to places. I mean, I don't see it as crazy, especially when you're a guy that hasn't played in years and you're getting paid as much money. You should be getting you should be getting sign-offs for every guy that you see. Anybody you talk to that has anything to do that touches you in any way or looks at you in any way beyond eye contact, you should get a sign off from Brian Cashman because you're not doing anything productive for this team. So I completely understand where they're coming from as far as a guy that he's traveling to go see, that there's definitely some weird
PMC in Atlanta, Progressive Medical Center. They focus on
Progressive Medical Center. Like that just sounds like a steroid clinic to me.
It just sounds made up. Focuses not on rehabilitating specific injuries, but on reducing inflammation in patients by identifying and treating its underlying causes.
Yeah.
Maybe he's like an herbal supplement guy.
Right.
Maybe he's just rubbing different, like, you know,
creams
from his garden.
Different creams
on his bum ankle and his hurt toe and his shoulder and his back and everything else that was bothering Jacoby Ellsbury.
Who told you to put the bomb on? I didn't tell you to put the bomb on. Who told you to put the bomb on? No, he's going out there and visiting weird doctors in Atlanta. You don't do that. I'm sorry. I know that he went through
He's done it before, though, and the Yankees didn't have an issue. That's where I think this falls apart for the Yankees. He had been seeing that doctor for years,
yeah,
and they never raised an issue with it until now.
They never approved it either.
That's true. Their doctor, Victor Bouquet.
Victor Conti, is that what you just said?
Yeah. he said, you know, the Yankees never raised an issue until now. This is
new. Yeah, this is new. They've never said yes either. They've never gone out and said, okay, approval granted. You can go see this weird doctor in Atlanta with a sketchy name that sounds exactly like every other steroid clinic that we've seen come up.
No, but he's saying, Bouquet's saying that PEDs are against our policy. We don't believe in steroids.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, that's a good line to have. I mean, I would. That's a good like ethos to have as a clinic. We don't believe in steroids. Steroids are anabolic steroids, not good for the body long term.
Or you could just take the Dave Chappelle route. Just say, sorry, officer, I
couldn't do that. The thing is when you're looking at some of the things that they're saying and they're like, oh, we would never. It's actually completely contrary to what we believe in. Steroids, while they may be beneficial in the short term and help what's happening with your symptoms, they are not going to alleviate the underlying problem and why things are happening.
Why? I thought HGH helps you get back on the field faster.
HGH, that's exactly, yeah, it helps you get, but you know, long-term, it's got deteriorating.
So factors. Do you think that Ellsbury was doing some form of illegal performance-enhancing drugs, seeing this doctor the last couple of years? We know he probably did something shady back in 2011, which got him his huge payday when he was with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
But do you think he was doing anything shady these last couple of years with the Yankees to try and get back on the field?
I mean, probably. And that's why the Yankees have no problem with it. Because the Yankees are looking the other way because they're like, at this point, we do need him back on the field.
Yeah.
So if he gets popped for something,
do what you got to do, man.
Go for it. But now that we have an opportunity to get out from under this goddamn contract.
That's not fair.
It is fair. They are paying him. They can do whatever they want with the information. How is that not fair? It's their money. They're still spending that money to go out there and to see if this guy can get back healthy. They tried. They gave him every opportunity to get back healthy. You know, whether they were looking the other way in certain times or they were trying to give him the benefit of the doubt because he knows his body the best, fine. But guess what? It didn't work. And then throughout this process, other injuries would stem. They'd come out of absolutely nowhere. It was like Stanton this past year.
Well, we thought
all
he was making
Stanton's
up injury.
Rehabbing, not his Yankees, knees hurts.
We thought the Yankees were making up injuries, or it was like an agreement with Ellsbury where they were just going to say, "You're going to hurt something, so when you're going to still get paid, but insurance is going to pay for it. So we're going to make up. Oh, now your toe hurts."
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Apparently, Dr. Doom over here in Atlanta is going through and putting these these whatever the hell he's doing, trying to get the inflammation down.
There's not much of a precedent for these sorts of things working out for the team.
Why is he so inflamed? He hasn't done anything. Why is there such inflammation going on in Jacoby Ellsbury's body?
Is he eating nightshades? Those are inflammatory.
Why is this a problem with him? Ice. Why does he get in an ice bath?
He's got a broke body. He's just got a broke body. Some guys don't have broke bodies. Some guys can play through ailments, small injuries, they can run through a wall. Yeah, they're going to be banged up, but they're going to be out there the next day. They're going to tape it up, rub some dirt on it, and go out there. No, not Ellsbury.
I've been whitewater rafting in the Pacific Northwest before. That is glacier water that's coming down. It's cold. It's cold. Just jump in a river. He doesn't have to do much to get the inflammation down. I'm saying, you definitely don't have to go to Atlanta.
Natural spring water does help joints.
Yes, glacier water. Glacier water sounds unbelievable. They bottle that shit and put it in clinics in Atlanta, apparently.
So I just don't see a way this ends for the Yankees well. I don't see it. I don't see it unless they can get.
It's the same thing, though. What harm does it do? There's no PR problem here.
No, it's just dragging. It's going to be a topic of conversation, is all. I guess they're shooting their shot. They're seeing. Let's see if we can get something.
Yeah, why not? At this point, it really doesn't matter for them because they're either paying him or they're not paying him. And if they don't shoot, then they're not.
They could reach a settlement, though, which I have not gotten a firm answer how a settlement affects the luxury contract, the luxury tax.
So it's not out of dollars out of pocket?
No. So I have not been able to confirm on all these articles written. There hasn't been something where if a settlement is reached, say the Yankees right now owe him $26 million. Say they reach a settlement for $15 million. I don't know if $15 million affects the luxury tax, $26 affects the luxury tax, or zero affects the luxury tax. I don't know. I haven't seen someone say one way or the other.
Let me tell you what it's going to be. It's going to be $1 short of that last luxury tax limit. Whatever the amount is that affects it, that's where the settlement will be. That's when Boris steps in and be like, look, okay, we're settling now. Okay, this is where we need the money because this is how much you need to stay under that second for and sign Cole. This is where we need Ellsbury needs to take a bath and eat some money. Cole will send it to him through Bitcoin or something into an offshore account and everybody will be happy.
There's also a whole angle with this where there's player confidentiality and the Yankees could have done something shady there that they broke some sort of policy for confidentiality with doctors and stuff like that.
But the problem is that he's not going out and actually telling the Yankees. So from what I've read in this too, there have been instances where all the information has not been given to the Yankees. There have been things left out, whatever that is, whether it's, you know, a certain visit here or a certain visit there, or it was just general saying, hey, I'm going to visit this doctor and this place, but then certain visits were left out. You know, I don't know. I don't know if they're checking flight records and looking to see when Ellsbury's traveled. Who knows? They might have a handler. I think they do have a spotter on him just to make sure that the insurance, like anything that they could possibly find, that guy's writing down.
I'm envisioning Boris going into Yankee Stadium meeting with Brian Cashman, and it's like they have two things on the agenda. One of them is the Ellsbury situation. The other one's Garrett Cole. And it's like, they're yelling at each other tooth and nail about Ellsbury. Boris is cursing out Cashman. And then he's like, okay, let's talk about Garrett Cole. So what can you do for my client? He's like, oh, I brought you a present for the Garrett Cole signings. Not for the Ellsbury, just for the Garrett Cole signings. $300 million, you say? Okay, yes, please.
Yeah, I think he's going to make the money on the Garrett Cole signing. You know, I think that you have to, for him, it's...
I think the only question again, is he's got nothing to do with the Yankees.
He's just got nothing to do with it. It's out of his hands now. Now it's going to be in the hands of... the courts or whomever is the arbitrator, whoever is actually going through this and making that the decision on what's happening. So it really doesn't have much to do with Boris anymore, I don't think. With the holiday rush here, you have to be able to ship out orders quickly, efficiently, and affordably. But how do you keep track of all those orders, decide which shipping carrier to use, or even if you're getting the best rates? Luckily, ShipStation can help. With just a few clicks, you'll be managing your orders, printing labels, and getting those products out the door and delivered on time for the holidays. ShipStation has been a big part of what we do at Bronx Pinstripes. It makes it much easier to get products out the door, make sure you're getting them where they're supposed to go and on time and at a very good rate. Plus, their customer service is top notch. That's one thing I've been very impressed about. If I've had any issues, I call them, I get resolved very quickly. So no waiting on hold or doing any of that nonsense. It's been very quick, straight to the point, and I'm super happy with that. You got to take the hassle out of the holiday shipping this year. Let ShipStation help you handle everything with ease. Just use my offer code BLUE to get 60 days free trial. That's 2 months free of no hassle, stress-free holiday shipping. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com. Enter offer code BLUE. ShipStation. Make ship happen.
So Greg Bird, I guess we're still talking about Greg Bird. He has elected free agency. He cleared waivers. He's not going to take his assignment and go back to Scranton. Any thoughts on that? Happy to see him go. Wish him the best.
I just don't care anymore.
Great. We can move on.
I'm over it. You know, one thing that we didn't touch on the last week, because I totally forgot about it. I know we had it in the notes, but I'm telling you, man, that little altercation that it wasn't really an altercation. It was just the little shrug of the shoulders.
It was completely made up in your mind.
No, it was completely accurate. Everything started there. You could see it. I don't know if he was battling some kind of demons inside and he was just like, you know, there was, he was just sad because his abilities were not proving to be, you know, what he thought they were going to be. And he just felt like an inferior person. And then the presence of Derek Jeter just completely compounded that. And he never got over it. I mean, he literally never got over it. I think he was watching where he was, when he went fishing and he was like off of the U.S., I think at some point, like, he could see
in the Florida Keys.
He could see Jeter's house from Davis Island. And he was just like, binoculars.
Yeah.
Just like, woe is me. Staring at Jeter and his wonderful life with his beautiful wife.
Well, I do hope that we can finally put Greg Bird and Jacoby Ellsbury just to rest. And that kind of, I saw a lot of articles being written, and I wrote one about the Yankees 2010s decade. And looking back over the last 10 years, 2010 to 2019, 10 seasons of baseball. How would you, what are your feelings looking back at that?
It's kind of a blur. It's almost like one of these, when you look back at how much didn't happen and how much could have happened,
mm-hmm.
it all meshes together. And it's just, you know, I don't even see that many opportunities lost because it seems like,
I don't know, early parts happened, of the decade.
Yeah, but it happened so early. That's the thing. When you're thinking about the whole decade, like things went wrong early on. And when you see what happened with Ellsbury, and then all of a sudden you got like, all of a sudden you look up and Kevin Youkilis is and Vernon Wells are on your team. We're like, what the? Travis Hafner, like, what just happened? Like, what?
Yeah, it happened.
What just
fast.
Happened? How did this go down? Like, how do we now have all of these weird veterans on the team? And you know, and now we're losing Cano and we have Ellsbury. It's just like strange things happened.
So I tried to sum up. In the article I wrote, like, each year, not necessarily was it a success or a failure, because when you're the Yankees, any season that doesn't end with a championship is a failure. Like, that's just the company line, and that's how a lot of fans act. But you know as well as I do, 2017 didn't feel like a failure, did it?
No, because it was a resurgence. It was like right. It was a breath of fresh air.
So,
and the Yankees did something very different than they've done in our lifetime.
So I tried to sum it up from how did it feel from a fan perspective going into the winter. 2010 definitely felt like a failure. They couldn't repeat. They had the same team as the 2009 championship, and they lost in the ALCS to Texas. Underachievement. 2011, you could kind of see it's like, things are getting a little worse. Everyone's getting a little bit older. They got bounced in the ALDS. 2012, it was sad because Jeter couldn't even stay on the field in the ALCS. He hurt his ankle, and they got swept by Detroit. And you could kind of tell, all right, this is probably it for the core. But those years, 10, 11, and 12, they won 95-plus games in the regular season every year. So they were still good, but they could not get it done in the playoffs. So I sort of lump those years together in the decade, those 3 years. That's one chunk of it.
But then, and also, like, mentality-wise, in those years, you're already, you know, we just come off 2009. There had been championships before that. Yankees were always in the mix. It hadn't been, like, as long of a stretch that the Yankees were not.
Oh, those 3 years are World Series or bust. You went all in on free agency.
Yes.
Your homegrown players are at the ends of their career.
Absolutely.
It's win or go home. It's win or bust.
But my point is that there wasn't like a feeling of like that we got to win this year. Like it's I don't know. Like the feeling.
Oh, really? I thought that was 10, 11, 12.
No, I mean, different in the sense that we haven't won in so long. That drought wasn't there where it's got to happen. I mean, like the drought of the desperation because of a drought. Yes, because the aging players are there. But you still have that feeling like, yeah, they can absolutely win. Now it's just like, now we got to see it to believe it again. It's almost it's a very different feeling.
Yeah, and then 13 and 14, those were just depressing years. Other than the Mariano and Jeter farewell tours, nothing good to talk about.
Right.
15, they pulled us back in. That was the first year we were doing the podcast. They pulled us back in. They pulled me back in, only to let us down. Wheels fell off at the end. It was, if you were watching the team all year, you could sort of see it was a slow, gradual decline. Everyone was declining that year. 16, the first half was the same as 15, but then they actually, quote, rebuilt at the trade deadline. They traded away some
retooled.
Key guys. They retooled. Sanchez comes up, Judge comes up, Severino is there.
Like Sanchez is like Babe Ruth.
Hit 20 home runs in 2 months. It was a really fun second half of the season, even though they weren't playing for anything. And then 17, they took a massive step forward, and that felt exciting. Even though they lost in the ALCS, it felt exciting. Now we know why, maybe why they
which feels dirty now. Yeah.
Which feels dirty now. But think about it, at the time, nothing but good things to say about the team. And then 18 and 19, I now lump back into underachievement. They built World Series contending teams and they haven't reached the World Series in those 2 years. So the whole decade, no World Series appearances. Middle of it was just so nothing. Jacoby Ellsbury, these contracts, Carlos Beltran, Brian McCann, like, ugh. It's not fond memories of these players and the randomness of some of those players. And I sort of got on this topic because I was searching through Jacoby Ellsbury in the Yankees decade. Do you realize that for that decade, Jacoby Ellsbury ranks 14th on the Yankees war list for position players?
Yeah.
I would have thought he would have ranked 114th. 14th.
It speaks to the players, doesn't it? It speaks to what was going on in that decade. It speaks to the length that, you know, the core was there. And when they left, they weren't there long enough to put up the numbers probably to compete in that as high. And then you have just a bunch of random dudes, man. That just it was a strange semblance of guys, and now you have young guys coming up. So, you know, if he had stayed on the field at all, he probably would have been top five.
So in the article I wrote, I pulled the top 20 war leaders over the last decade for the Yankees. Some fun things from it. Aaron Judge ranks third, despite the fact that he's only been there really since 2017. Just goes to show you how great he is. DJ LeMay, who cracked the top 20.
Hell yeah.
And he only played 1 year.
Hell yeah.
Gleyber Torres is 17th, but he would be my number one pick to lead the 2020 to 2029 Yankees.
You mean, oh yeah, for the next decade, for sure. Yeah. Well, him or Judge, I think, would be.
I just think Gleyber has a, Gleyber's younger, so there's more prime.
He's
years
22.
Ahead of him.
He's 22, right?
He might be. Is he 23 at this point?
I don't know. It's gonna be a sad day when he turns 23. I feel like
that's why everyone's just talking about how, oh my god, he's 23 and he's a shortstop, but he's hitting 40 home runs.
22 sounds better.
Yeah, but it was, you know, go check out the article. There's been a lot of great articles written on the website recently, but 2010 to 2019, RIP. I'm glad we're moving on. 2020s are looking up, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be we have another core now, you know, and it's a matter of getting these guys under contract so that we can keep them around for a long time. We'll see what they can do. But we got some good. I've seen some things about the Yankees window and it closing soon. And I've seen some random articles written because of the news cycle has been very dry and people are just pulling and trying to get some things going.
People want clicks. Those are probably the same writers saying Derek Jeter is overrated.
The fact is that this window is not remotely closing. The window that the Yankees have is wide open. They have a very young nucleus and none of them are under contract yet. Once they get them under contract and we see them for even longer times, they're not even, some of them you could argue are not even in their prime, 2 to 3 years from their prime. If you look at body and how the physical body and like when you're at your best fitness, some say 27, 28 years old is when you're at that point. So we have guys that are, you know, not even to that point yet that are going to be superstars. So when you see Gleyber at 22,
there's no argument for the Yankees window is closing.
There's none. People have tried to, but it doesn't exist. And the fact is the Yankees are now, I think, are getting to a point where there will be money spent because of the money that's coming off the books. Whether it's this year or next year.
But the money coming off the books is really more next year.
Whether it's this year or next year, there's going to be more money spent, which means this team is going to be even further loaded. And I know a lot of that money has to go to people that are already existing on the team, but I still think there's going to be a good amount of signings. Whether it's this year or not, whether the fact that they go out there and sign a Gerrit Cole or they spend it next year, however it's going to be, there's going to be money spent in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and one of those, not a signing, but a rumored possible acquisition is the Yankees have interest for Oakland's Blake Treinen. He's a relief pitcher. He's 32 years old. He's tall, big, tall right-handed pitcher.
6'5".
Yeah, entering final year of arbitration. He's had a weird couple years. He was acquired midseason in 17 from the Nationals. Was really good with Oakland in 2018, like really freakishly good. 81 innings, 38 saves, .78 ERA, 1.82 FIP. Just fantastic season. He was on the All-Star team. And then this year, 2019, he stunk. 58 innings, 4.91 ERA, 5.14 FIP. So who is he? Like, what are you getting if you acquire him? That's a huge question, I think.
It is a huge question. You know who he reminds me of? I was trying to place who he reminded me of, and now I got it. And granted, I don't think he's got the checkered past that this guy has, but Hunter Strickland was a guy that a similar player in the sense that he – and you see this with relievers. That's the thing about relievers. That's the beauty, and that's why it's so mind-numbing that if we're considering a guy like this and then you have a guy like Dellin Betances who's done nothing but show you that he's been a consistent reliever when he's on the field. Granted, we have this Achilles thing, but supposedly it's not going to be a problem. But when you see relievers peak, there's so many peaks and valleys. They spike.
Yeah, just look at Tommy Canley over the last 2 years.
Yeah. But Hunter Strickland was a guy who, you know, showed, like, freakishly good stuff on the field and then fell off the face of the planet and then was an ass off the field. He had that altercation with Bryce Harper, I think. But the and Trennan's the same type of guy where he showed when he got traded from Washington, went to Oakland, and then the next he was throwing to like a 5-something ERA, was terrible, and then got to Oakland, turned it around. So they did something with him, I don't know, and was able to turn around. And then the following year in 2017, right, or 2018, had that really good year.
Yeah, 18.
17 was when he got traded.
18, he finished 15th in MVP.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, granted, they were a team that was they came on like gangbusters at the end of the year. They had
Oakland was a very good second half team in 18, yes. And he was one of the biggest reasons.
Yes, and they were very reliant on their bullpen.
So he's estimated to make $7.8 million in his final year of arbitration next year. If you're going to be spending $7 to $8 million on him for 1 year, I just don't see how that makes sense when you could sign Dellin Betances. I know it would be for a longer term than 1 year, but when you're talking about per year luxury tax implications, why would you spend 7.8 on him when you could spend maybe 8.5, 9.5 on Dellin Betances?
Yeah, I think it's the commitment. I think the fact is that they don't want to commit the 3 years probably that it's going to take to get Betances. That's just my feeling that on how they've – and because we're looking at how they've operated with Dellin Betances before. It seems like they've tried to – you know, undercut him in every opportunity they possibly can, whether it's lying
it's
about
so weird that
medical
it's the,
stuff.
This one guy, it's just like one thing after another with
or
him.
Or trashing him in the
local
papers
guy,
when
local
it comes to
player.
Arbitration. You know, it's just the track record is very weird with him. And I think that he sees, you know, his opportunity right now to go out there and to try to get as much money as possible. And I think that some team is going to offer him, you know, a 3-year deal. And I think that's fair. I think that he deserves it. And especially if this Achilles injury is just if it is just a strain and he's going to come back 100% from it and he's got the medicals behind it backing that up, then I think that there's no doubt someone's going to give him that much money.
Might be the Phillies.
And that term. Possibly, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of convenient
Phillies are
now.
Linked to every ex-Yankee because of Joe Girardi.
Yeah, and guys who are not even ex yet, but on the market. You know, haven't even left the building.
Right.
Didi, by the way, was definitely in Tampa on Monday morning.
I saw
Sunday
that picture
night,
of him
Monday
on the
morning. Yeah, we saw a picture of him on the plane. And he was just fishing somewhere else too, not in Tampa. Somewhere in the, I think either South Florida, like further South Florida.
With Greg Bird?
Not Greg Bird, but he was going on a flight. Someone had a picture of it. We saw in like a Facebook group. I messaged the guy and was asking about it. He was a guy who worked at the airlines and took a picture of Didi on the plane going from Tampa to Miami at like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning on last Monday. So he was there for a meeting.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
or to clean out some stuff that he had there.
What's in Tampa?
I don't know.
So he was there for something and quickly.
I'm sure he's got some place that he rents for spring training. No,
maybe. I mean, I wouldn't, maybe. Who knows how long-term those things are. But, yeah, I don't know. To me, like, all the brass, everybody who's making any decision for the New York Yankees are in Tampa. So that's where you go to make decisions and deals and sign things.
Getting back to Trinan, though.
Talk about them.
If there's one thing that Brian Cashman just seems to have his finger on, it's undervalued bullpen arms.
Yeah.
He picks these guys out of obscurity sometimes, and they contribute to the bullpen at a very high level. He's done it 1,000 times. So don't you have some confidence that Brian Cashman and his team of nerds and maybe the new pitching coach, Matt Blake, says, Trinan is a good buy low candidate right now. We can turn him back into 2018 version.
Yeah, no, it's very possible. And I don't think it's a huge risk either. And that's why I see them trying to be flexible and staying with the 1 year deal and giving up a low end prospect that's going to amount to nothing anyway.
It would basically be a salary dump for
Oakland. Already got like five or six of them, you know, from the Yankees farm system. Why not add another one to the cabinet? And I think that when they're looking at that, I do believe that the commitments, the pin between signing Betances and not. If Betances were to agree to a 1 year deal, I think he comes back. But I just don't see him doing that. I don't think it would be smart for him personally.
Well, it depends on if he gets decent money for the 1 year.
But the thing is that it all goes away when you're thinking about the way baseball contracts are. They're all guaranteed money. So if you can guarantee yourself $10 million 3 years, if you're guaranteeing $30 million or 1 year at $12 million, what are you doing?
Well,
knowing what's happening,
what
are you doing?
What if it's 1 year $12 million or 2 years $16
million? Well, then yes, you make that deal.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to be that low.
$8 million a year. Why? Fangraphs projected him at $9 million.
I don't care what they do I look like a guy that cares about the projections from these nerd freaking websites?
Okay, but can't you use that as a ballpark?
I think it's higher. I do think it's higher. And I don't think it's going to be a 2 year deal. I think that if for it to be worth his time, it would have to be a 3 year deal.
They projected him to get the contract.
At least a player option.
They projected him to get the contract that Ottavino signed, which is 3 times 9. $27 million for 3 years.
Well, there you go. Didn't Ottavino? Okay, so that's a 3 year deal though. That's not 2 years.
Yeah, 3 years. But if the market dries up, and it could dry up,
then you go for the 1 year deal. If you're talking about a 2 year deal and a 1 year deal, and you can get a little bit more out of that 1 year deal, and you probably can because now you have some leverage, saying, okay, I'm doing it for 1 year. You got to pay me a little bit more for this 1 year. Then okay. Then yes,
it's a prove me contract, and he'll go out and prove himself.
Yeah, then you sign the 1 year deal, and you bet on yourself. But if it's between a 3 year deal of guaranteed money at $10 million, then you're guaranteed that much money. That's a lot of money to be guaranteed. All right, if you're looking for some good ideas for a guy in your life, let me break it down. Stop getting all the nonsense, the little trinket, the socks, the cliche wallets, the ties, all that crap. Do this guy a favor and make his life more simple. That is something that I absolutely value now. If I could get something that takes away the thought process of dealing with an everyday process, I'm happy. That makes me a happier dude. If I don't have to remember to go get razors and shaving cream and all that stuff and use a dull razor all the time, that makes me happy. Listeners of this show can get $5 off any Harry's razor shave set by heading to harrys.com/bluewire. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. This is a perfect gift for the guy in your life. Holidays sets start at $20. That's within the Secret Santa limits, so you could do something at work, or if you have a brother or a boyfriend or whatever, it's perfect. The blade refills are as low as $2 and will save him money, and it's a perfect give to give back because, listen, they actually donate 1% of all sales to a charitable organization. As a special offer, fans of the show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/bluewire. Now you'll get free shipping. Each Harry's shave set comes with a weighted handle with the option to engrave, 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shaving gel for a rich lather, travel cover to protect the blades, and it's all packaged in a handsome holiday gift. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Just go to harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire.
Before we get to mailbags, Astros cheating update. This is becoming a thing every episode, and maybe people are sick of it, but maybe people aren't. So there was an article on SNY written that the Yankees were complaining after game 6 of this year that the Astros were using light signals to relay signs. So not trash can banging, not towel placements, not, you know, crotch buzzers or whatever we talked about last week, potentially light signals out somewhere in the outfield to relay signs. The article said the Yankees only noticed it early in the game, but obviously Chad Green gave up the 3-run home run in the first inning of the game, and it was on a pitch 6 inches off the inside part of the plate. Looked like, what's his name?
Gurriel.
Gurriel was sitting all over an inside fastball.
when you know what's happened already now and you see that home run, I guarantee he knew that that was coming. I know for a goddamn fact that he was sitting fastball. I mean, it was very clear that he was sitting fastball anyway. Whether he knew it was coming or not, he was sitting fastball. But now, he definitely knew it was coming. And he was definitely sitting fastball on the inside of the plate.
How did he hit it, though? I still don't know how he hit it.
Because he turned on it. And all you got to do is turn on it. You know, if you get that bat out ahead of the plate to where you can make contact, you could turn on the ball. If you know it's coming, you could turn on it and get it out. And he did. He turned on it quickly and got it out. But yeah, that pitch was a good pitch. It was a damn good pitch.
Yeah, it's not a pitch you usually give up a home run on.
No. It's a broken bat is what it is.
Or pulled foul. Like, no one keeps that thing fair.
Or you sit on it and you're going to hit it thinking it's something else if it's not a fastball and you almost break your hand because it's coming up on you. Like, it was a good pitch that was on the well inside of the plate. Not even – it was off the plate. It was a good pitch on the hands.
Yeah, so it was very – you know, we're hearing more things whistling. Yankees complaining about whistling in the first two games of the series and now potentially light signals in game six. So, again, this might be nothing, but it could be something. And the more information that comes out, everyone's going to be paranoid about the Astros. Anything that they notice, anything anyone noticed, will be said now.
Absolutely. They need to hurry up and make these decisions on what's going to happen.
You mean the penalty? No, yeah. This is going to take forever.
But they need to...
Because baseball is going to want to gather every little detail they possibly can so they don't mess this up. Baseball cannot mess this up.
Well, they have to just go to the other side then. You don't have to look at every detail. You need to go to the side that penalizes them because you cannot mess it up on that side if you go harsh.
In the eyes of many people, you can't, but I think they're going to take their time. There's going to be a lengthy investigation.
I mean, how lengthy can you go, though? Because it's got to happen before the season. You got to have this go. It's got to be wrapped up by February.
Yeah, you would think so, but it wouldn't shock me if it's not.
Yeah, that's a mistake if it is. If they have this lingering into the season, that's a mistake. That's a huge mistake on a PR side, on the fact that, you know, people have to make decisions for what's going to happen next year. I mean, the Astros have to make decisions. And who knows what their penalty is? It could have implications on what they do in the offseason. So, yes, you're not looking at that as a determining factor to, like, cater to them, but it's still a part of it. It's still a piece of the puzzle. Other teams want to know what happens with the penalty so that they can move on and adjust to whatever that is. They just need to know what that is.
Yeah.
And so do the players.
You'd think. But
because the players are they're
would it shock you?
They got to get their cheating plans. They got to get their cheating plans done right now.
Would it shock you if baseball does not handle this properly?
No, because they've done that 100 times.
Yeah, exactly. So this could be dragged out into the first part of the season and everyone's just going about their business. With the Astros, like
this one's a little different in the sense because there is so much smoke and not even smoke. We've seen like hot embers. Like there is a flame that
is
happening.
There's ex-players reporting what we now have found video footage of,
yes,
and picture proof of. So yes. Yeah, I know it's not actually been proven, but it's basically been proven.
And that's the thing. When you have such visible, clear evidence of what's going on, then you got to move more quickly. You got to move more quickly and you got to make a swift decision. Because I think anything less than that, if you're dragging this on, well now you're going to start questioning the leadership of baseball. And now Manfred's on the hot seat for looking at a bunch of things. If he comes out and acts like the sheriff and does a swift kick in the ass and lights them up, I think that he will be looked upon a hell of a lot more favorably.
If there's nothing done before the season starts, do you think teams would protest playing there?
Yeah, probably. And do you think something along those lines, whether it's protesting playing there? But yeah, I could see that happening. There would be a lot of... Can you imagine the meeting at the plate before the game starts every time they're at Tropicana Field?
You mean
with the managers? No, the manager's meeting where they're, you know, exchanging lineups and talking at home plate with the umpires. And you got Aaron Boone and A.J. Hinch or whomever and A.J. Hinch every game.
You got the wrong juice company.
What's company? What did I say? Tropicana? Oh, yeah. Minute Maid, whatever. In Houston.
You want to read mailbags? I my voice is shot.
Yeah. Let me get there. All right. Andrew, this one's from Andrew C. Hey guys, love this show. What would constitute this Yankees offseason a success? What would you constitute a failure? Everyone wants to see a Gerrit Cole signing, but what if he simply refuses to come? Or what if the money is too high for a Strasburg or a Zach Wheeler? Remember, Cashman surprised everyone last year with a trade for James Paxton, and the in-season move of for Encarnacion was savvy and creative as well. The easy solution after watching this year's playoffs is to say, just sign starting pitching. I could argue against that. But we all know the New York front office will never has it that simple. With the coaching staff already being addressed, what do you think needs to happen personnel-wise in order to push this talented team over the hump to achieve 28?
So that's a different question. His last question is a different question than what do you consider a success or a failure?
Right.
Because –
well, it depends. And not in some people's eyes. I think it's the same thing in some people's eyes.
Okay, yeah, fair. But some people say Gerrit Cole or bust. But that's a little unfair to say. Starting pitching needs to be addressed, though.
Yeah, I mean, nobody. We're talking about fans here. Emotional fans are not fair.
No, we're trying to be fair. I'm trying to be fair.
You're trying to be fair, but you know, emotionally, there's a lot of people that aren't fair. And you know what? They have the right to believe that not signing Gerrit Cole is a failure.
Well, I see that argument.
It's fully possible.
I would sign Gerrit Cole in my GM plans. I signed Gerrit Cole, but like Andrew lays out, what if the Angels offer him a contract that's so outrageous that even most Yankee fans say, "Well, that'd be stupid."
I think for him, it's going to be. I think everybody already knows what it's going to be. It's going to be, you know, 250 plus. You're looking at what it's going to be. But I do think it's very comparable when you look at what happened last year with Corbin. Corbin was offered a stupid contract, a very high contract for what we thought he was going to get. I think expectations play a lot into this. Expectations say to us, Gerrit Cole very well could be the highest paid pitcher in baseball history. And people are totally fine with that because I think they're already expecting that. They see Scott Boras. They see a guy that pitched the way he pitched into the World Series and during the World Series. And they're saying this guy is going to get the biggest contract and probably deserves it. So what's stopping you?
Right.
Corbin was not that guy.
Okay, so you answer the question. What's a success? What's a failure?
I think if we're talking about in the fans' eyes, a success is
your eyes. I want to know your eyes.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm different. Look, I take an approach to this that's a lot more eyes open in the sense that I understand that they're not going to sign the biggest guy, and I don't think it's an end-all be-all because I do believe that. I mean, I like Zach Wheeler a lot. I started falling in love with him when I started before my GM plans and all these.
Okay, but that's a starting pitcher. So you think they need to acquire a starting pitcher in some form, trade or signing?
Yes.
And if they don't, that's a failure. The offseason.
That's a big missed opportunity. Yes, it's a failure. I'd say it's a failure.
I agree. If they don't address the starting pitching, it doesn't have to be Gerrit Cole. Doesn't have to be Zach Wheeler, but it needs to be addressed. I will again defer to Brian Cashman to say this is, in my mind, an upgrade. And I will say, well, okay, I've trusted you this far. I trust you again. But something needs to be done to try.
You've trusted him with the starting pitching?
In general, with the team.
Yeah, but starting pitching, if you put it on an isolated island.
It's been very highly questionable.
So why would you then believe in him if he says that to you about the starting pitching?
I trust him that if a move is made, then, you know, like James Paxton last year.
Yeah.
A lot of us said, well, James Paxton and Patrick Corbin could be very similar performance-wise. And for money-wise, you got a much cheaper version of the same pitcher.
Look at the second half of the year and you see a hell of a pitcher that had to go around his pitching coach in order to make improvements.
But that kind of deal might not be out there this year. And the best deal might be sign Gerrit Cole to a 7-year, $280 million contract.
Here's another way to look at something, and I think that some people haven't totally looked at and thought about. And maybe the Yankees, and I think they showed that they did, that they like the talent that was on their team, the arm talent that was on the team during the year this year. And I think that they believe that they ran into some bad luck with injuries and whatnot in the first half of the year and then got those guys back. And if you look at what happened after the trade deadline, the starting staff was good. It was very good. And even throughout the playoffs, it was good. It was not a problem down the stretch.
It was not deep enough.
Not deep enough, but it was there. But again, there's too many. There's a lot of arguments you could say about that. Is the philosophy of the New York Yankees.
Talent-wise, was not the question.
But here's hold on. Let me speak to this. I think that depth also had to do with injuries as well. So there was some bad luck too with the whole Herman thing. Like they got decimated, whether it was injury or just or guys being assholes off the field. For whatever reason, they weren't pitching at certain points. But the Yankees did address now the pitching coach. They've addressed what's the philosophy of what they're doing. And maybe they believe that they see the guys that they have currently on this team, similar to what the Astros saw with Gerrit Cole when they made that move for him, that they see a guy that they can turn into something much better. And maybe Matt Blake and his staff and the people that are going to be around him say, you know what, the people that are on this staff currently, I know that we can get much better out of them and make them, a much higher higher elite level starting pitching staff. And they don't have to make that big move. So they're looking at guys like Wheeler or somebody lower level than that. So look, I think that there's an address.
Would be a big move. Wheeler's going to get,
I think Wheeler's a big move.
A hefty contract, whether it's what you projected or not, it's still going to be a hefty signing.
But I think that's the thing. Like, you can look at what Cashman has already done to the pitching. It's almost now he's taken it off his plate. Kind of. He's saying, you know what? I'm putting it into the analytics, and we're trusting this system. It's still on him. I understand.
It's still on him. Everything is on him. Whether this goes back to the Ellsbury thing, whether he physically wanted to sign Ellsbury or not, Brian Cashman gets the blame.
But he's changed the system of evaluating these guys now, and the system in which they are now bringing people up. Right. So maybe that difference, because it's made significant differences and paid significant dividends for the Houston Astros in making similar changes. And you see it around the league for people that have put money into this thought process and this philosophy and have emphasized it. They have seen good things. So maybe that is the edge that they think they need because they have the talent existing. So if they don't go out and make a big move, they did make a big move in the pitching in the sense that they're approaching it in a different way. I'm just playing devil's advocate here and like looking at sides of if they don't go out and sign a pitcher.
It's not going to be satisfactory.
Not going to be satisfactory for anybody, but I'm saying it for a non-fan for actual baseball, it very well could make a very big difference.
Yeah. I could see people inside the organization making the argument. We addressed, like you said, the pitching coach, and we're going to get a full season of Severino. Upgrade.
Look what happened in the second half of James Paxton after he made adjustments. Big, big difference. Yeah. Maybe we see more consistent results from actual changes that are good and positive for that individual player. And now we see guys even better.
But the argument for signing a pitcher like Cole or Wheeler or acquiring somebody else is still there, because when you look at the rotation for not just 2020, but the next couple of years, you've got Tanaka's contract coming to an end. Hap, I wouldn't even want Hap there now, but Hap is definitely gone after next year. So you're going to have spots open in the rotation.
Unless he vests it and has a phenomenal year from...
I can't even see them picking that up, though.
No, it vests. It was
an automatic vest, or
yeah,
was there a buyout?
It's innings. No, it's based on innings, yeah. No, it's based on innings. It's based on performance. If he hits some of these vesting options, like that's my whole point about the third year. It's like, theoretically, you would want to have him back because now you're looking at a guy who's actually achieved, you know, certain things that were positive. So
if he has a comeback year,
which is fully possible, then do you not want him as a fifth guy? If he were to come back and show you that he was the guy that we had in the second half of 2018, I think a lot of people would want that guy as their fifth starter. So I think there's adjustments can be made. And again, who knows what these adjustments are going to be made during the spring and what's happening right now? Because I guarantee there's a lot of things happening right now as far as, Matt Blake and his whole team of nerds are looking these guys, are doing CSI on every single one of these guys and looking, they're probably wiring them up, putting little stickers on them, you know, stripping them down into their undies and got stickers all over them and making them throw and do all these things and to see where they go and to see what their body is telling them on these cameras and what adjustments that they think they can make. Guarantee all this stuff is in process right now.
J-Hap's contract vests with 165 innings pitched or 27 games started in 2020.
There you go. So it's based on volume.
So
does
I,
that not
I can't, even if he's pitching well, I don't see them allowing him to get that option vested.
What does that op, does that option, if they trade him, does that, that vesting option stick?
It didn't say.
Because that could be a big peg for some trading him.
Well, that could be negotiated in the trade, I believe, with him.
With him, maybe, I mean, it's already there.
Yeah, but
the contract exists.
Yes, but
why would he have to do anything to do with it? If there's no trade, if there's a no, if there's not a no trade, he really doesn't have anything to do with the negotiations.
Maybe.
Because that trade, because the contract is already there. But if it does carry over, so if he throws, so let's say your little adorable trade to the Padres, convenient adorable trade to the Padres happens, and but that contract still stays in there and the vesting options are now the you're looking at the Padres having to take on 2 years if he throws 165 innings.
But it could be agreed upon where if the option vests, the Yankees have to pay X amount of money.
Yeah, I mean that's paying out a lot. Then you're paying a guy who threw that those innings and potentially was pitching well. So I don't know. I don't like it.
I don't see him hitting those vesting options.
Yeah. If he's pitching well, maybe.
You want to read the final one from John?
All right. John, obviously we'd prefer to have both, but given the choice, who would you rather have? Blake Treinen at an expense of a lower level prospect and Gerrit Cole, or would you rather keep Betances and sign Zach Wheeler? I really like Treinen as a bounce back guy next year. And that rumor reeks of Cashman trying to buy low on a talented guy, similar to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I don't know why this either or would exist, but if I have to pick,
well, because he's talking about the money, and I don't know why it would really have nothing to do with Gerrit Cole.
But the money doesn't even add up in that scenario. Regardless, let's just play by John's rules here. I'll take Gerrit Cole and Treinen.
Yeah. if this is like A or B, then yes. There's no other, nothing else.
Because
nothing
Gerrit
else
Cole,
about that.
Even though Betances is, I would rather have Betances than Treinen. I think Gerrit Cole is far and away the best pitcher on the market. Far and away the best pitcher of these four pitchers. So yeah, give me the best one.
Yeah, we're not talking about money. We're not talking about any other circumstances.
That
if that's just what we're talking about, then yes. But they have nothing to do with each other.
I don't see Blake Treinen as something the Yankees do because of money.
Blake Treinen and Betances are very correlated. The other two are not.
They're correlated.
They have nothing to do with those
two guys. I don't see them both being there. I don't see them both being there. But the money, average annual value, again, is going to be so similar that you would never make a decision based on that. A couple million bucks a year is what you're talking about, max.
Right. No, I think it's more, again, to the contract, to the term of what's happening here. The thing is, if Gerrit Cole is signed, it has nothing to do with Betances or Treinen. Because one of them could be signed. Treinen could be just another rumor that's floated out there because nothing else is happening. And the Yankees have made trades with Billy Beane before. It's convenient. There's a lot of convenient rumors going on right now. A lot of like, who's done business with who? Who likes who? Who's had so-and-so on their team before? And let's throw them into some rumors together.
Yeah, so the Yankees made a minor deal with the Mariners, Jerry DePoto, and I was going back and
he makes like 97 trades every season.
But Cashman and him have traded at least once every year for the last 4 years.
Didn't they trade the same guy back and forth like three times?
Thien.
With Paxton, right?
Thien, yeah.
Yeah.
He's been passed back and forth to the Yankees and the Mariners now twice.
I mean, I like making deals with them because, well, I guess it's
Jerry DePoto's that guy in your fantasy football league who drafts and then immediately wants to trade. He's got like four trade proposals out the night of the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, but he actually does it in real life.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where do you end up at the end of the day with him? Not nowhere.
Mediocre.
Back in the same place.
77 wins. That's where you end up.
Right back in the same place.
Yeah. All right, that's it for Mailbag. Submit your questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast or on any of our social media channels. Last thing we're going to do today is something we're calling Out of Left Field.
Find that out as Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes. Deep to left. Really deep.
In the air to left field. Back at the track at the wall. We are tied.
I pissed on a public building?
Yeah. All right, so Out of Left Field. It's going to be a weird segment. Who knows where this is going to go? Sometimes it'll have to do with baseball. Sometimes it's not. Today, it's going to have to do with a broken Keurig machine. So I have a coffee machine in my apartment because of my dad's coffee company. Just have a real coffee machine. And Leanne had an old Keurig machine from her old apartment that when we moved in together, we just kept in a closet somewhere never had any use for it. And then we were just cleaning stuff out because we were receiving so many gifts for the wedding that we had to find room for other things. And I was like, we got to get rid of this old Keurig machine. So
did you, first of all, real quick, I'm sorry. Did you guys have like a box for envelopes and stuff at your wedding or something to put any envelopes or anything in there?
Yeah, but it was taken up fairly early in the night because Leanne assigned someone to take it up so no one would steal anything.
Right. Okay. I couldn't find it. And I was telling JJ, I was like, usually there's like a box or something for like an envelope.
To tell you the truth, I believe it was on the table with the seating assignments.
Oh yeah, I walked right past that.
Well, how'd you know what table you were at?
I found it. It was more fun that way.
It's like a mystery.
Yeah. Ironically enough, it was in left field.
Yeah.
Keep going with your Keurig story.
So this Keurig had been sitting in our closet for 2 years. Leanne put it on OfferUp, the app for OfferUp, for $30. I was like, no one's going to pay $2 for this thing. Someone wanted it for $30. We hadn't tested it in 2 years. That's on me. I should have tested this thing before we sold it. Regardless, it was sold. The guy is texting back and forth with Leanne, like asking questions about the Keurig machine. And she's like, oh, no, it's perfect. Makes great cups of coffee. He goes, do you have any accessories that I can have with it? Who has accessories for a Keurig machine? Guy wanted accessories. We didn't have any accessories. So he drives down from the Bronx. I'm out there lugging this Keurig machine. Put it in the back of his car. He hands us the $30. I'm like, all right, great. Never going to hear from this again.
Yeah.
The next day, he sends us a video of the thing not working. It's like making this weird click, click, click noise when he tries to brew the coffee. I'm on Google trying to troubleshoot this thing because I feel terrible that we sold this guy a broken Keurig machine. So I'm like watching YouTube videos on how to fix a Keurig machine. I like sent him a couple articles like, hey, try this, try this. He's just finally like, come on. I'm like, all right, we'll get you your $30 back. So little lesson to everyone out there. Do not sell an electronic unless you've tested it in the past 2 years.
I mean, isn't that something that you should definitely always do?
Yes, that's my fault.
Before you sell anything,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, no. Just make sure you're not selling a bag of nothing, a bag of tricks.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, I take full responsibility, for it.
You're the guy now that's when you sell something online, you're basically, because OfferUp essentially is a garage sale on an app.
Yep.
Right. You're just going out and meeting somebody. But if that didn't exist, you're the guy that sold people broken shit at a garage sale. And now you got to go back and remember where the hell that place was. Or you just chalk it up as a loss and be like, that guy's an asshole. Karma's going to come back.
Right. Well, he got his $30 back. I was nice about it.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people that I think don't do that. And they give that a bad, they give that all those apps like eBay and just garage selling. Cause I like going out and finding deals.
Have you ever bought something from a garage sale?
Oh, hell yeah.
What?
I don't know. A lot of things. Many things. Multitude of things. Usually it's furniture, though.
I think if I had a garage sale, physical garage sale, yeah, I would have tested it. The problem is I didn't handle the sale of this thing.
So you were just kind of like dealing with the end result. Like, she's like, it's sold. Can you go get it to the guy?
Pretty much. I picked it up out of the closet.
Did you clean it?
It wasn't dirty.
It was in a closet for 2 years. Did you wipe it down?
I brushed the dust off of it.
That's a
it
no.
Was no, it wasn't dirty. Like, I looked at it. It was not dirty.
So here's my pet peeve. Cause I'm on some of these apps. I like going and looking at like older stuff. I said on Twitter, this past week or so that I've been on like a starting lineups kick. So I'll like look around occasionally, just like when I have a second and I'll look up, you know, remember the old figure starting lineups?
Yep.
The little like, they're like figurines basically of baseball players. I had a bunch of them growing up, a bunch of Yankees. I had like Dave Rigetti, Ricky Henderson.
You sent us a picture to the chat.
Yeah. I put it on Twitter too. And I found the 1987, it was coined as the 1988 Yankees, but it's actually 1987 if you really look at what it was. And I got it. It was still in the box, like the whole deal. Like, it was old as shit.
It's a collector's item.
It's great. I don't keep it in the box. I don't care about the value or collect. I just want it to have it on a shelf. I'm not trying to resell it. That's not the whole purpose of this. I just kind of like it because I like a bunch of, I'm basically going to end up with a bunch of trinkets in my office.
I see them behind you right now. You got some bobbleheads over there.
Yeah. Anyway, when people don't clean their shit and they sell it, it pisses me off.
No, this was not dirty. I promise you it wasn't dirty.
Listen to this. This guy had an inbox. But at some point in the last 30 years, a can of Coca-Cola exploded all over this box. Because there was definitely like stickiness on the dudes. And I'm like grabbing it. I pull it out of the box and I see like a little splatter. I'm like, oh man. And then I pull it out. I'm like, there's stickiness on it.
You better hope it was Coca-Cola.
It was definitely Coca-Cola, like some kind of a soda. And it, who knows how long it'd been there. It was like, it become like syrup again.
Yeah.
And it was just like caramelized on these guys. And it was
probably
just
been there since 1987.
Probably been on there since 1987 or 1995 when he dropped a can of Coke rumbling through his attic. So like that part of it, like if you're going to sell something to somebody, clean it. Whenever I see in a listing, like, oh, it just needs a little bit of a cleaning, I move on. Cause I'm like, just clean it. Now I don't trust you.
I agree with you. I sold him a perfectly clean, but broken Keurig machine.
Shame on you.
Good news is the bad rating goes to Leanne's account, so I can still
did he give you a bad rating?
I don't know. I'm assuming so.
Well, if you gave the money back, to me, it's no harm, no foul. Like it was.
We gave the money back, and I spent an hour trying to troubleshoot this thing with him.
Yeah, I mean, if it's that, you should probably.
If anything, I should have only given like $20 back.
Well, that's just dirty. Then I come and stand outside your building and wait for you to come out.
Well, we didn't meet him right outside the building. I'm not that stupid.
Well, wherever you were probably within a half block of your apartment.
Yeah, I just gave him a cross street.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying is I know you live around there. I'm hanging out.
Yeah.
And we're going to have words. This is going to become a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. I was thinking that the whole time. And I really did feel bad. There's like when I was watching the video and like I was turning bright red. I was like, I can't believe we sold this guy the broken machine. But yeah, hey, it happens.
Now you've learned your lesson. You probably will never sell anything again.
No, I'm not a sell something guy anyway. I'm just a throw it in the trash.
Yeah. I've become that. I've become at some point, like I would go and like, I would save the amount of, I have two boxes filled with like cords, just cords of like stuff that I've had.
Like extension cords and stuff?
Like extension cords or like printer cables and like
telephone lines. What are you going to do with those?
Because I always need at random points. I'm like, oh, I need this. And then I go to my box.
But it's not like you're labeling the cords. So you're now rifling through dozens of cords.
Oh, they're organized. They're organized. They're all like, wow. I got them organized and I know where things are. But then as soon as I start throwing things away, because I've gotten to that point where I'm just like, I don't really care anymore. I'm just throwing things away. Next day, I need it. Happens all the time.
So the, like I said, I'm a throw out guy. The trouble for $20 or $30, like the time it took me to try and troubleshoot this thing, walk down, talk to the guy, hand him the cure, like it's not worth the $30. I'd rather be done with it in 2 seconds and throw it in the garbage.
So what you do is if you have, you make like a time of like every 6 months or once a year or whatever, you say, I'm going to go through and find a bunch of crap that we don't want and list it all. So you do it in like one shot. You bulk it and now you're not this $30, but you sold like 10 things and now you have like $500. You're like, okay, that was worth it. But if you just do one at a time, you're like,
you have the luxury of a house that you can store stuff. Yeah. Like we have a small apartment that half the stuff we got for the wedding, we had to put at our parents' house because you just can't fit it all in your apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. So,
trash. Throw it in the trash.
All right, I like this. We're going to do some random, out of left field, some random segments.
Yeah, this was stemmed from your squirrel story a few years back. The Scott versus the squirrel saga.
God damn that squirrel. They have not come back, though. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, they're afraid. They're afraid of you.
You're goddamn right they're afraid of me.
All right, guys. Thanks again for the voicemails. If you want to call the voicemail, or the mailbags, if you want to call the voicemail line, it's 646-480-0342. Submit your questions for next week, and we will talk to you then.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.